This is the Dave Scott interview for July 5th, 2005. Try to stay on track here, too.
Okay, good.
All right, terrific. Let me get started with my questions. First, I did want to emphasize that you'll get either an email copy of the particular chapter on Apollo 15 or the training chapter by email or a hard copy, but I can get that information to you later, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, terrific. I want to ask some training questions first, if I can.
Sure, and I guess...
Yes, I've got that. I do, and I've got the, in fact, I've got the binder here in front of me, and that's what I've been using to help formulate my questions so I don't go over ground that's already been covered.
Okay, remember, this is a long time ago.
I know. Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, terrific. On the KC-135 training with the LRV trainer in the KC-135, where did that... those 1-6 flights take place? Were they out of Kennedy Space Center or some other location?
You know, that's too far back for me to recall.
Oh, okay.
I would guess they're, I don't know, you know, they could, because the 1-6 trainer was in Houston, but it was also at the Cape. And, you know, the only place I could find would be our training records, and those are in the journal.
Okay. But specifically, I was thinking of the Vomit Comet flights where you were testing with either a partial or a full rover in the aircraft.
Yeah, and we did a lot of that at the Cape, too.
Okay.
So, but as you probably know, if you don't, Eric Jones, I think, has all of our training records.
Okay.
Buried in the journal somewhere, and you can go in there and find out what we're doing, where, and when.
Okay. All right, then I'll skip forward a little bit here. There was a training vehicle called the Grover.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And, of course, I've got a number of very good shots of you and Jim training both out at, I guess, Flagstaff and Taos, New Mexico.
Right.
Were those the only two locations that you remember training with Grover, or were there? Did they take this vehicle elsewhere? Okay.
Having the wheels, but the Grover wasn't meant to replicate the rover at all. It's just something that looked like the rover, but it gave us mobility.
Yeah, basically it was just a vehicle for you to plan EVA movements or plan EVA.
Geology movements.
Yes. Okay.
My philosophy was always do everything on the Earth as absolutely closely as possible as you can do it before you get to the moon. And then you learn things about, how long it takes you to get from one place to another, and then what the Capcoms might be doing in between, and what the geologists might be doing. We set up a back room on the other side of the hill or wherever, and we actually would simulate a day's work by having the Grover.
Okay. Okay, terrific. That you've covered all the bases on that one, so that's good. Let's see here. There was also training with a full-blown 1G trainer, KSC, but I assume those fully suited training sessions only with the 1G trainer only took place at Kennedy Space Center?
Oh, yeah, and those were only procedural things. In other words, where you put the tools and how you align the antenna, that sort of thing. Again, it wasn't meant to teach us how to drive.
I understand. Okay. I'd like to have a question about the backup crews, because basically they trained in parallel with the prime crew. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did they take place on the same day, or did they have different days to use these trainers?
Different days.
Okay.
Yeah, we were alternating because support crews had to get stuff ready, and, you know, we might spend one day out on a rock pile with a rover while the backup crew was in the simulators.
I see. Okay.
Alternating. And again, it was how the support teams could support us in the various exercises.
Okay. Can you tell me about your influence on the decision for selecting the Hadley Apennine region?
Well, that's pretty much in the book.
Okay.
I mean, you know,
well,
I got to sort of make a non-countable vote.
Oh, right, okay.
But if you look at it, I put that in the book, but I don't know what my influence was. You'd have to ask Jim Head or Lee Silver or somebody who was involved more deeply in the decisions. I liked Hadley because it had the variety, and especially with a rover. You know, the only way you could really see Hadley or work it geologically was to have the mobility to get you to the variety of
Okay. Once the site had been selected, how much with the availability of the rover there were the specific EVAs planned in, you know, due to the ability to get you further and faster? I assume that the rover aided in the planning of each specific EVA. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
And so we had two sets of traverses, even in our cup checklist, one of which was on the rover, and the other set would be if the rover didn't work. So perhaps it worked on the first EVA and didn't work on the second two. Then we had very detailed backup traverses planned for walking.
I see, okay. Okay.
And we did that in our training too. I mean, it's sort of like we got a good backup system and probably never have to use it.
Okay. At any time, were there discussions of, especially say partially through the EVA activity, if front and rear wheel steering was lost, were there any plans to try to do a straight line mode of EVA with the rover?
Oh yeah, you'd do as much as you could. I guess we never... You get into the philosophy of failure modes.
Yes, that's right.
And the probability of both systems failure, front and rear, is a double failure. Although you could lose a hand controller, and you'd lose front and rear.
Okay.
So there's a lot of that. And you pretty much, in that philosophy, exclude double failures. As an example, you exclude a failure of a rover and a failure of one of the guy's backpacks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you probably know, if you have that double failure, one guy didn't get back.
That's right. That I've read, yes.
Yeah, so if you get to the limit in your oxygen supply, mission control will start you back so that if the rover fails at any point, you can walk back.
Yes.
And at the same time, the other factor in that is if one guy's backpack fails, you can have the buddy list, the beast list, and you can breathe where you get your cooling, really, because you have the OPS. Tie together for the cooling and drive back.
Okay.
That was another limit that mission control had to watch in terms of how far away we were. But if you had a rover failure and a backpack failure, you had a bad day. that was a double failure.
Okay. Yes.
And you get to the point where you can't cover everything, and that's the beauty of mission rules, or the exercise in developing mission rules, allows you to go through all those what ifs. Guys in a room. So you'd have maybe 12 or 15 guys, each of whom would be experts in some part of the system, and you'd sit and spend several hours going through the what ifs. Everybody makes their input, and then you write down the rules. And then if you do that, you're pretty well prepared.
Okay, great. Let me ask you this question, because I've asked a couple of the thermal control engineer and who passed it on to a few others, and they couldn't give me an answer, and it relates to the LRV batteries. These were installed on the LRV when the launch vehicle was on the pad, but the only document I could find said that these batteries were loaded from the launch umbilical tower instead of the service mobility tower, the one that pulled up to the vehicle. And I thought I'd pass this by you to see if you knew which one it was. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I've got some Boeing.
Pardon?
I've got some Boeing documents, but it's not too definitive in explaining that. It's maybe a small point, but I don't want to get that wrong.
Okay. But there's a lot of checkout stuff in the M&O building, and then they'd load the rover, and there's bound to be documentation to help you with that.
Okay.
Somewhere.
I also have a good source in Huntsville at the history office. Maybe he can answer that one for me.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good source for you.
Okay. Jim Irwin, in his book, wrote that he felt the landing at Hadley was quite jolting. It was, in fact, it was much worse than he was expecting. At least that's what he wrote. Was that your impression?
No, and I think the difference is, he was focused on keeping me updated with how we were doing and not the fact that we were getting close to the ground. And when we landed, we put a rear foot pad, because I couldn't see anything, because of the dust. The rear foot pad went in a little crater.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've read your description of your observations during the stand-up EVA, but I would like to know your personal response to your realization that you were actually looking at Hadley for the first time, and when you stepped off the ladder, because I've read the mission reports and the pilot report, but on a personal level, what was your feeling?
Try to write it in the book for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the reasons for the stand-up EVA, since we're working on the rover, was we had been told by the radar team that there were boulders, lots of boulders at Hadley, and our photos of the area had a resolution only down to 20 meters.
Mm-hmm.
So in the photos, you couldn't really tell. And the radar people
Okay. The station stops for each EVA were really clearly defined, but in reading the transcripts, your conversations with Joe Allen revealed a degree of flexibility regarding, I think, the exploration. Did you have exploration goals of particular interest to you?
Well, yeah, all of them. And, you know, we did have the flexibility, and the system designed it. In other words, the reason we spent so much time working geology and training on the geology was so that we'd be able to make judgments on the moon and use that flexibility. So the more we learned, the more able we were to adjust where we were going to achieve the basic objectives. And of course, we didn't really know what the surface looked like till we got there because of this lack of
sure.
high resolution on the photos. So the reason we went out all these many, many days with Lee Silver and Jim Head and all those guys was to get tuned up in areas such as Tom's, get tuned up in areas that were similar to Hadley, such that when we got there, could make the necessary adjustments, and at the same time, the geologists back in Mission Control in the back room, the same guys who trained us, so we all had this communications link where we understood what we were saying to each other.
Mm-hmm. Were there any discussions on the possibility of crossing the rill to the other side during the first or last EVA? Cause
oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, really? Okay.
Something like that, you know, that was, but no, we early on decided not to try to drive down.
Okay. Okay. During these EVAs, prior to the EVAs, did you have any chief concerns as you set out on the rover, or did you feel that they were, there were no imponderables there that you know? Did you encounter anything of a great concern?
No, once we got it out and got it running, why, it got very comfortable. It was pressed on. No one could get it. We have backup procedures and backup equipment. Mission control said if something goes wrong, we're comfortable that we most likely had addressed the problem and had a solution. I guess the one thing that we always were somewhat aware of backup navigation to get back to the limb was the old Hansel and Gretel trick, Polly and Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we had comfort after the first EVA, then we'd take a side excursion and came back a different way. But in the process of planning all that, you probably know we had a sun compass so that if the rover nav system broke down, and again, or didn't work, again, nobody tried this on the moon. It's a very simple system, and it worked brilliantly. One little failure in there, and you had to find your way back, and you couldn't see the limb.
Yes.
So you had to have some method of navigation other than your tracks and the rover system itself.
Okay. A lot of people seem to think the Grand Prix exercise first took place on Apollo 16, but from what I've read, obviously, this was something that was conceived for Apollo 15, since it was the first LRV mission. Could you describe what was needed to be accomplished to, I guess, convey the performance of the vehicle back to the contractors or future missions?
Well, as I put in my email to you, Jim and I decided we'd conduct a drive test like a flight test, like a first flight test of an airplane.
Okay.
Attempted to film, but our camera did
Okay. Did you at any time want to take the rover to on the opposite side of the question regarding the rill? At any time did you want to take the rover to a higher elevation than you did on the EVAs?
Mm-hmm. That thing was amazing how well we pulled up the hill. We could hardly tell we were going uphill until we got on.
That's great.
Yeah, amazing machine.
Okay. Did you, let me ask you this. Did you bring back any portions of the rover for evaluation to aid Apollo and 16 and 17? It is. It performed beautifully. It really did. What do you think future rovers will look like for our return to the moon, and it looks like we are going to return? You think it'll be decidedly different or pretty much like the original model?
Why change?
Yeah.
I mean, it works. It worked extremely well.
Okay, because that's certainly a point I want to raise in the book. If it, you know, the old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Absolutely.
And why re-engineer something that's already proven?
Well, you can make the case for new materials and new structures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, new electronics, new television, upgrade in technology. But the basic concept, I think, will be the same. I mean, you know, independent suspension, independent drive wheels.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, maybe even telemetry back down to Earth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what else would you like to add with regard to the rover that we haven't covered here on this short list of questions?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you have, but I guess you probably have most of what I would say. One of the things in comparing to the 1G trainer,
mm-hmm.
You get this floating sensation, and you gotta have the seat belts, or you're gonna float right out of the seat.
Yes.
You know, that became very, very early. And then you get a lot of feedback when you're on a bumpy surface through the suit. You're tied to the rope or the seat belt, and through the suit, your arm feeds back into the hand controller, which was sort of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're changing because of the feedback of the bumps, you're changing the steering.
Yes.
And even the speed. So one of the things that we had to learn to be, you know, careful about.
I see. Okay. Well, I know the hand controller was changed late in the program, but it was a good change.
Yeah, I think they tightened up the breakout so you wouldn't get this feedback.
Okay. Well, along with the my answered questions here and this bulging binder that I've got, I think I can, and your book, I think I can put together a really good chapter. And once I do complete the rough draft, I can email it to you or I can send you a hard copy, whichever you'd prefer.
Well, either way, whatever's convenient.
Okay.
You know, I can download the email or you can stick a hard copy, I'll send you
one. And sure, you can mark it up. And then, because I have a little saying, once it's in print, it's forever. And I know, despite all my efforts to get everything absolutely right, somebody will write and say, I got
they
some.
Always do.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, in my book, I've had people write and tell me I'm wrong.
Oh.
Well, okay.
Whatever you say.
Whatever you say. Don't worry about it.
Well, thanks. I've interviewed four of the five LRV teams members. I only need to speak with Jack Schmidt, and I'm sure I can set that one up also.
Good luck. Well, I think that's fine. I'm looking forward to your book, and I'm glad you're into it. Anything Harlan says, it'll be good, it'll be good.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate his help, too, in getting this organized, because I'm sure you get many requests.
Yeah, I do, and I just, you know, there's so many that I don't do them, unless I come through either Dave Harlan or Eric Jones, and those guys have done such great work.
Yes.
You know, that's why I say go read their stuff. They've really done super work.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Well, I wish you well, and if I can help you any more, let me know.
If any other questions come up, I'll just email you, and we'll get those in there.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks again, Dave. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, and good luck.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
See you.